You are listening to Rift Overcast.
Hello, welcome to Rift Overcast. My name is Matt, and with me as always is Joe.
Hey, what's up?
I'm just still cracking up that you actually knocked your computer over. I mean, how do you do that? Like, you knocked, like, the whole tower off your desk?
Well, yeah. Well, what's so hard about that?
God, dude. I mean, it must have just been, like, your entire forearm against the side of it.
Well,
huh?
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much was. That's why, like, I'm just amazed that I caught it before it hit the floor. I'm just amazed.
That's so funny, dude.
The best part is my Xbox broke its fall, and I do not give a flying fuck about my Xbox. So.
It would have been really interesting if, you know, I got a text, and we're supposed to be doing a show tonight, and you text me like, sorry, dude, but I just knocked my computer off the desk. It broke in half. I can't do a show tonight on a computer. So moving on, we got a huge episode packed for you tonight. Lots of lore stuff. We're going to have Juno from Rift Shiny's podcast on here a little bit later to talk about a lot of the new lore that came out. But for now, let's go over the announcements. The poll results, I did remember to do a poll last week. The poll results, or the poll question was, how would you like to see Tryon handle Planar Attunement and Storm Legion? The options were reset everything, increase the bonuses and the worth, redesign the system, nerf experience required per level, or leave it alone completely. We got 4 votes for reset everything, 4 for redesign the system, 4 for leave it alone completely, and 3 for increase the bonuses and the worth of it. So it was almost a 4-way tie. What do you want them to do with Planar Attunement, Joe?
We've been talking about this sporadically throughout the last few episodes, and it's really hard. I mean, you really want new players to come, especially in the expansion, which I think everyone, you know, including me and you, expect a huge influx. You don't want them to feel behind. So, but at the same time, you can't just reset everything. Then you're just going to, you know, cause such a stir with the old veteran players. So they had to find some sort of middle ground, whatever that is. I have absolutely no idea. I'm going to bet they're just going to pretty much leave it how it is. I'd want them to put better stuff into the hexes, but again, that's another balancing act because you can't put too powerful stuff, obviously.
Yeah, I think that they're mostly going to leave it alone. I think that I would honestly prefer them to leave it alone. I mean, there are players that put a lot of time into, you know, grinding out the Planar Attunement really, really quick and getting it done and over with. And it's definitely possible for you to do that. Like, I know several players that, you know, post on the forums, whatever, and they post stuff like, you know, that they cap their PA in like a week or 2 weeks or something. They've got all this kind of math out there to figure out, like, you know, what the shortest amount of time is that you could possibly cap your PA in. But your average player is not going to do that kind of a PA grind marathon. So I think right now, you know, you can't have Planar Attunement have a huge impact on the game. It needs to remain what they originally intended it as, which is just kind of like fun end game bonuses and just kind of an alternative way to use the experience that you acquire after hitting the level cap. And I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think they're going to, you know, we're continuing, basically reiterating what we're saying. I think they will continue, you know, basically what they're doing. But as Kel said in chat, you know, with the new influx of players, they might have to redesign it. Just, I wouldn't be surprised, basically, if they did something not to make new players come catch up entirely, but almost made them, I don't know, get a huge chunk of those levels back just so they don't feel so far behind. But I have no idea what that would be, and who knows, you know. I don't even know how I would feel like that, and, you know, granted, I have a lot of PA, but I'm like halfway. I'm nowhere near the cap. I would say an average player takes like 6 months at least to cap out.
They could do something like take those crystals that you get that give you a set amount of experience after the level cap, and they could give you like a limited amount of more powerful ones, you know, maybe like a daily that you can only repeat 10 times that gives you like 500,000 experience or something like that, but you can only get 10 of them just to give people a little bit of a boost. And then, you know, once you're done completing those, that's it for your bonuses. And then you're kind of on your own.
Yeah. I expect something along that. I mean, that just seems like simple to the point, and it doesn't upset, you know, too much balance either way.
So you might not think that this is Rift news, right off the start, but it is, trust me, Star Wars The Old Republic is going free-to-play. They announced this just recently. And this has sparked up some interesting conversations, especially on MMORPG.com, where there was an article about this, about what the next MMO is that's currently running a subscription model that's going to switch to free-to-play. And judging by the comments on the article for MMORPG.com, it seems like Rift has mostly dodged the bullet this time for users. They're calling out the Secret World, and they're calling out, I don't even know what else they were calling out. Somebody even said, like WoW might go free-to-play. I don't know if WoW is going to go free-to-play. I don't know about that one, but nobody's really calling out Rift. Some of the comments on the article included, and I quote, "Rift would be a great game to go free-to-play, though I think they still have enough subscribers to continue as is for a while yet. Trion does a solid job of connecting with their community that they can continue to get away with a subscription-based game." Another user also said, "Rift isn't going anywhere fast." I'm assuming that he means it's not going free-to-play anytime soon. "From what I've seen in-game, the population is growing right now, and that trend is bound to continue once Storm Legion hits." Another user said, "I think Rift manages to sustain itself as a sub-based MMO because its ambitions were modest. They spent a large portion of their development budget not on voice acting and flashy art design and promos, but on developer tools so they could add new content quickly, and it shows." What do you think, Joe? Do you think Rift's going to go free-to-play anytime in the near future here?
Maybe not in the near future, but I almost think Storm Legion is going to, kind of sway it either way. We're going to talk about it later, Scott Hartzman's AMA that took place last week. But I do think that he hinted at some sort of model that, and while Tor went free-to-play, me and Matt had discussed off-air that I wouldn't really call this like your standard, run-of-the-mill free-to-play. They're doing things very similar to Lotro, though it does have its differences in that while it's free-to-play, you can still have a subscription, and having a subscription gives you so many better perks that it's almost like not really worth it to play free-to-play. But with the nature of Tor and how, 1 to 50 is like a single-player experience, I could see them generating a lot of income that way because, people will come in, they'll have 1 to 50, they'll possibly re-roll, and, they might buy a few things from the shop that are like cosmetic that will get them some money. But anyone that's currently playing that is into the rating or their operations, whatever you want to call them, is going to sustain a subscription because you cannot even enter the operation. So while it's free-to-play, it's an extremely limited free-to-play. So this is something I could see Rift doing in terms of like a very limited free-to-play. I'd never see them doing like a ship free-to-play. There's so many, what's it called? Runes of Magic, that's like the WoW clone that's free-to-play and all those type of games. I never see it going that route. But in the AMA that, like I said, before, we're going to mention later, Hartzman does talk pretty extensively about how he wants to expand Rift Lite, because there's a lot of people where a subscription is a stumbling block for them as much as they want to play that keeps them from doing so. So expanding that,
I think that is just like a really, really small minority. I mean, when you're running a business, obviously you want to bring in as many customers as you absolutely possibly can. But when you're talking about like free-to-plays and like people who can't pay $15 a month for a game, I can't imagine that that's any kind of really significant amount of people, to be perfectly honest. I think that's probably, maybe it's just me, but I feel like that's a lot of people that don't want to pay a subscription and are kind of like hiding behind the internet mask and being like, actually, I can't pay the subscription. It's like, yeah, you could, you just don't want to.
I think that a lot of people play free-to-play. I think there's a huge market that's untapped. And all the games that go free-to-play that were, like, major, like Lotro and now Tor, are generally always made free-to-play, like, once they're deemed, like, failures. They're never, like, made free-to-play off the start. Instead, they usually play, like, lesser games, like Runes of Magic, and there's a million other games like that. So if they would have, like, a big, like, AAA MMO like Rift do it, but still sustain its, like, integrity, because it'd be, like, Kel mentioned in chat, like, an a la carte system, I think people would be attracted to that. And like I said, it's a huge untapped market. You know, people played, I can't believe the name is escaping me. The game was like 2D for years. I can't think of the name right now. It was a very famous free-to-play.
RuneScape?
No, was it RuneScape?
RuneScape was pretty 2D.
Yeah, I think it was RuneScape. Yeah,
or are you thinking of Maple Story?
No, it wasn't RuneScape. I think it was RuneScape. But games like that, that game had a tremendous amount of players. I'm not saying those players are quality players, but let's be honest, at the end of the day, the developers want any and all people to play their game because more income means better for them. So I don't doubt, like, there's a, I don't think it's like ginormous population, but I don't know. Like, if you told me that they, a year from now, Rift went, a limited free to play system similar to Tor and they garnished, I don't know, 20,000 more subs, I think that's legitimate and practical.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I can see why the free-to-play model would be more profitable from a business perspective. But when you're talking about the success of a game, doesn't part of it kind of matter, part of the degree of success have to do with the stability of the community, You're never going to build a solid MMO community off of a free-to-play MMO because there's too many people going in and out and play, you might play for 2 weeks straight and then not play the game again for 3 or 4 months. You might play the game for a week and then never play it again ever. But then somebody else comes along, comes in and is going to try it. So there's a lot more of a a turnaround rate on free to play.
I think there's a lot of ways to fix that. I mean, you could simply make a chat that's limited to subscription. Like only like if they did that in Tor, I think that would make sense where only subscribers can turn like that's their general chat, and then they don't see the free to play general chat and vice versa. Like stuff like that. So that way you separate, the communities. So that way there's no like interfering with one another and like deteriorating the community, like you said, and bringing it down.
You know, it's been said on multiple websites and multiple forums. You always kind of catch a little bit of this, but it's especially with Star Wars going free to play being kind of the movement that's getting people talking about this stuff again. More and more people are coming out and saying that free to play is the future for the MMORPG. I don't know if I agree with that. I think that I believe Hartzman actually touched on this in the AME a little bit as far as like profitability goes. Like the amount that you put into the game, the amount of budget that you put into a game kind of determines like where your profit line is. And as long as you're above that line, like you can be successful as a subscription. I think that gaming developers, they just have to put more effort into the quality of it, and less into the flash and less into the, you don't necessarily need a ton of money is what I'm saying to make a good subscription-based game. I don't think free to play is the future, but what do you think on that?
I don't think free to play is like ever going to be the future, quite frankly. I just think that why people think that at all is because the subscription MMOs that have come out in the last handful of years have been terrible. And I shouldn't even say terrible, they've been mediocre. And what they, and I almost feel like instead of launching small, like, I don't know, maybe five different things and hitting their mark on all of them, and then with like a, plans ahead to slowly expand, they instead try to encompass so many different aspects into the game to match games like WoW that have been out, WoW is going on 8 years this November. And instead of like a very solidified small game that can slowly expand, they have a huge game that everything is lacking so many aspects because it was half-assed essentially, because they didn't have the money or the time, or maybe they did and they just rushed it out because they, were running out of resources and they wanted the money back like ASAP. So if a game comes out, and it, especially if it's a theme park type MMO like Rift and Tor and WoW, it has to hit its mark like on very, very subtle things as well as the major things. And as much as anyone can dislike or like Tor, I don't think Tor was a terrible game. I think Tor was a very mediocre game that needed a lot more time in development, which it didn't get, probably mainly due to EA breathing down BioWare's neck. And the hype machine killed that game. I've said that to Matt numerous times. The games like this that start the hype machine. I mean, the hype machine on Tor literally started the day the website went up, which was like October of 08. And then they kept announcing release dates and not meeting them. You should never do that. And that's why I even told Matt off air, I was surprised to see that the new Elder Scrolls game that was announced very recently, they came out and said that game's been in development for 5 years, but you haven't heard a peep out of them because they were intelligent enough to know that if you start hype like the instance in development, then 5 years going, the hype train kills you because it comes to a screeching halt because people start playing it and they're like, wow, this game is extremely mediocre. And the very same thing happened to Age of Conan. That game wasn't terrible, it was just mediocre. Period.
Well, when asked in the Reddit AMA, because we're going to get to the AMA in a second here, Hartzman did respond to somebody asking about Rift going free to play, and his response was, "There's something uniquely compelling to a pretty big (parentheses) and growing audience about zero friction. Try it out, kick in some money if I like it, and walk away if I don't." Said that's what, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he says that's what led us to doing Rift Lite and thoughts of how we might do more with that program in the future. And there were a few other comments. There are a few other people that were asking about Rift Lite and Rift Free to Play. And Hartzman did say that they're talking about ways to possibly advance Rift Lite because they want people to be able to play with their friends. And this is something that I've always loved about Tryon, is that they really care about their game and they really care about their community. A lot of times I think that's a marketing front. Everybody kind of, every company says that. But I think that Tryon, regardless of how we might feel about, you know, the most recent hotfix or the most recent nerf to one of the classes or something. They do care about us, and I think that they've shown that. And this shows that too, but I can't think what he's really kind of talking about. And I can't imagine that anything that they have discussed about Rift Lite could be anything that's really going to be anytime in the near future. I don't think it's really going to be a big priority for them right now.
That's why earlier when you were talking to me, I specifically said not in the near future. But just to respond to what Matt said in chat, that the problem with subscription MMOs is that they aren't sustainable. And that WoW has hit a plateau. WoW has hit a plateau not because they're not hard to sustain, but because WoW is going on 8 years old, so it has nothing to do with how much content or what content they release. People are just straight up tired with the game. They want a new game. So WoW's, you know, scenario is completely different than any other one because it has nothing to do with, you know, you can argue the quality of the game, you know, either direction, but that literally has nothing to do, at least in my mind and probably most people's minds, why it's leaking subscribers right now. The game is just old, and in MMO years, WoW is a dinosaur, let's be honest. Most MMOs go for, they have a 3 or 4 year stretch where they're big and they usually drop off. WoW is insanely old for its kind. There was an article, or a thread basically, I'm not going to read it or anything, but I'll basically say exactly what this one person on MMORPG.com, there was basically a thread talking about free-to-play being the future, and this person was basically denouncing that, saying that's complete nonsense, which I completely agree with. But basically the thing that she was trying to stress the most, I think it was a guy, my bad, but he was stressing that when games come out now, they keep half-assing it, like Tor did. So if you're going to come out and you're going to make a theme park type game in the same vein as Rift, Tor, etc., you have to do it spectacularly. You either do that, you hit it everything on its mark, or you have to do something different than no one's done before. If you don't do either one of those two things, you're failing. And that's the reason why people are so adamant about free-to-play now, because all the games that have come out in the last handful of years have either been half-assed or just not very good. There hasn't been... Everyone's following the same blueprint of Rift because it works. Or not Rift, sorry. World of Warcraft because it works. They don't want to stray off the path because they don't want to like risk the money and lose it. So instead, they follow this very generic path, and it's, instead of like hitting everything on its mark and being the next WoW, they either rush it, there's too much hype, and there's just so many factors into it, but that's really all it is. If a game came out and it was spectacular in terms of being very polished and on its mark, not biting off more than it can chew, people would want it, but that hasn't happened in years. I think that Rift feels more like old-time World of Warcraft, like Burning Crusade World of Warcraft. Once Wrath of the Lich King came out, which has no is definitely a coincidence, or not a coincidence, rather, Activision bought them very near to that date. They started appealing to much, much more casual players, and they went a completely different direction, simply for subscription numbers. But Rift feels a lot like Burning Crusade World of Warcraft, which is to say, caters more towards, not necessarily hardcore players, but not the crowd that wants to do literally nothing and get all rewards for putting no effort whatsoever into things.
I think we got it. Juno, say something. Let's see if we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, hello? We can hear you. All right. Hello. Oh. Introducing Juno, Rift Shinies. How's it going, Juno?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Doing good. Awesome. You scared me for a minute there because I saw the little icon and I was like, oh no, everything's going to go to hell now.
I'm a TeamSpeak noob. I'm sorry.
So we were just about to go over the Rift Reddit AMA. We took a few key points out of that if you want to join us on that.
Okay.
Some hot topics from the transcript. One of them that I picked out was everybody's kind of been wondering what happened to the Master Mode Deep Strike Mines because everybody thought that was pretty much finished. And somebody did ask about that on the AMA. And Elrar responded with, Master Mode DSM still had a ways to go. And we still had Caduceus Rise, Infernal Dawn, Primeval Feast, and all the dungeons and raids for Storm Legion to build. So it sounds like they've completely scrapped DSM, which means that we're probably not going to see, if they're prioritizing everything for, you know, obviously Infernal Dawn, Primeval Feast, Caduceus Rise, that's all out now. We have all of that, but they're still building the dungeons and raids for Storm Legion. So they apparently just, I'm getting that they don't have the time to do any master modes for the classic dungeons right now.
Well, it really wouldn't make much sense unless they just wanted to give you like filler content for the last couple of months till the expansion came out, because, you know, what's really the point beyond giving you more marks? Like, what would it give you, like two more Infernal marks a week? I mean, it would be nice to see it. I'm actually surprised how much he hinted that it was away, because from all the YouTube videos I watched, and you actually saw it when it was out, or, you know, on the PTS, it looks pretty damn close to finished to me.
Did you ever get to test the Master Mode Deep Strike Mines, Juno, or do you do Master Modes often?
No, I don't, actually. You guys are so leet.
another hot topic that we picked up from the Reddit AMA was resistance gating, which is something that we've talked about on the show quite a lot previously, because Joe and I both feel pretty passionate about not having resistance gating, but it doesn't sound like it's going anywhere. Hartzman responded to this, and he did say that resistance gating has its place, and he also said you can pretty much just buy a full core, though it won't be the best in the game, and you can augment your gear with runes. You can also now augment the focus with resistance chant itself, with a focus resistance rune for the focus for the core using Planarite. And if you want the complete best in the slot, then yeah, that's definitely going to require more effort and raid rift drops. But at the same time, I think best in slot shouldn't be a requirement for success, end quote. I don't really feel like he even really answered the question, to be honest, because I think the question was more like, you know, are we going to continue to see resistance gating? But judging by his response, it sounds like he's pretty set in, you know, he's pretty convinced that we're going to see resistance gating still.
I said in the past, resistance gating in this game is still better than WoW, because WoW, you know, getting the gear one now was a lot more tedious, but it doesn't mean that it's, you know, I like it any better here. I mean, he's basically saying you can buy almost a full core, which if you use a greater essence, you can technically buy 5 out of 6 slots. But my problem with that is the only way to get the 6th and final slot is to go do tier 2 raid rifts, which there's no daily raid rift for it, which I find retarded. They really should implement that. Because of that, there's such a rare amount of groups to actually do. You have to basically get your guild to do it, which again is a pain in the ass. And I think it's funny that the best in slot essences are from the events, like they had the fire one. And they released the fire one pretty much to coincide with Infernal Dawn, but they didn't release an earth one, which the earth one is probably more imperative than the fire one is because of Lathis and Rusilla. So I find it kind of funny they did that.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't like... One of the big things that I hate about the resistance gating is that a lot of your best in slot resist essences come for pretty often from either doing tier 2 raid rifts or doing the world events that go on. And the world events mean that, you know, these best in slots are only available for a very limited amount of time, you know, before... So if you miss them, or if you re-roll, you know, or want an alt that you want to be able to raid on an alt, you can't get those anymore, you know what I mean? There's no way to get them back at all. And something that you brought up off-air, too, when it comes to Tier 2 raid rifts, if you can't get your guild to farm the Tier 2 raid rifts, it can be very difficult to get a group to do that, because there's no daily quest to motivate public groups to farm those for essences.
Exactly. And they're also, I mean, I wouldn't say they're difficult, but for the, you know, average player, like I did the Earth one a few days ago, and that was a nightmare. We wiped like 20 times because people couldn't, you know, grasp a simple concept of, I have a 15-second debuff, I need to run out of the raid. And that was just absolutely ridiculous. And then, you know, you do all that, and it doesn't even drop your essence, which is, like, so aggravating.
Weapon wardrobe, we brought up a few episodes back, and this was brought up on the AMA as well. And Elro responded and said, while I'll never say never, it would at least be a while before we could consider making it a priority. And he also gave the typical response that we're all used to if you've been following Weapon Wardrobe, or you're one of the Weapon Wardrobe advocates, where there's technical hurdles that they can't get over to do it right now. So doesn't sound like we're getting Weapon Wardrobe anytime soon. It's going to be a long ways away if they ever do decide to do it. I think it's pretty much not even on the whiteboard at this point.
It's really disappointing. I really wanted this to be in Storm Legion. You know, if they basically said, like, oh, it's going to Storm Legion, I have no problem waiting. But to hear that, it doesn't really sound like we're going to get in the foreseeable future is pretty disappointing. Especially since, like, you know, I really think that the so-called hurdles are not really there. It's just they don't have the resources to devote to it, and that's really the only obstacle. But if I were them, I'd make it a priority and start devoting resources to it, honestly.
I agree, especially considering that I don't know what the Storm Legion armor and stuff looks like right now, and the Storm Legion weapons and whatnot look like. But, I mean, hopefully they look a lot better than some of the stuff that we saw while we were leveling in Classic. But that's always been kind of like a complaint of a lot of players, is that they're not really happy with a lot of the artwork on stuff. And it's just, it's one of those little things where it's like, okay, you can deal with, you know, having a branch for a mace and, you know, or a hammer instead of having like an actual hammer, as long as, like, you know, you can take that one good model every here and there that you actually do like, put it in to like a weapon wardrobe, it wouldn't be that bad. And I think there would be a lot less complaining about the art style, which a lot of people do like the art style, but a lot of people don't. So,
well, I mentioned last week, I'm sorry, but they could simply just add a remodeler or a transmogrifier like WoW is temporarily until they make it a priority, because I think that would, you know, quite all of us, at least if we knew eventually they're going to put that in. I mean, this would solve most problems. The only, you know, obviously bad part is it breaks the other weapon, but, or other, well, yeah, the weapon. But if I had to sacrifice that in order to get a remodeler of some sort, I'm taking it.
The new Cult Saga. Somebody asked if there was going to be a new Cult Saga. These are the epic quest chains, such as the one that leads you up to killing Greenscale and gets you a really nice, like, tier one equivalent weapon, epic weapon. And there was one for death that got you, I think, a helmet at the end, and then there was one, the one for water, that got you a mount. And there was one for the 1.8 world event when Infernal Dawn came out, and they had said, I completely forgot about this, but somebody brought this up on the AMA, and I completely forgot about this. They said that the long quest chain, it was essentially the Fire and Earth Saga, quest chain had disappeared when the 1.8 world event ended, and they said they were going to bring it back. So Elra responds to this, and he says, the plan is to reintroduce the 1.8 world event quest line as the Fire and Earth Saga. Some additional work needs to be done to make it ready for being reintroduced as a standalone quest chain, but there is no ETA on when we'll get it back into the game. So that kind of disappointed me a little bit, because a lot of people didn't get to do that quest, and this is really nice weapons for brand new characters that you can get out of that quest right now, but they need to get back into the game like faster. I mean, we're in 1.9, we're approaching 1.10. Once we get to Storm Legion, which is presumably going to be 1.11, once we get to Storm Legion, nobody's going to care about this quest anymore. So I'm almost afraid that this is going to end up in the same boat as Deep Strike Mines and Plain Touch Wilds, where we're not going to see it.
I mean, we've been talking about the last couple weeks. We think they're devoting every single resource imaginable, you know, to Storm Legion. So this is something I want them to get in, but I'm not going to be, like, tremendously upset if they don't. That's assuming Storm Legion is actually, you know, a very good quality thing. You know, if Storm Legion comes out and it's a little, you know, underwhelming, I don't expect it to ever be a flop of any kind, but it could be slightly underwhelming. I'll be kind of disappointed that, like, they sacrifice so many things for something that, you know, isn't, you know, out of this world ridiculous.
I'm trying to figure out, I mean, it worked, right? Like, what would they really need to change? How much do they need to change to make this a standalone quest line?
I mean, that's what I've been, I mean, but there's a lot of things like that. I mean, like I just said with the remodeler, that's a simple, like, here's a temporary fix. I mean, technically it's a Band-Aid, but it's one that I would welcome. I think there's a lot of stuff that they could simply put in that would be temporary fixes. You know, as long as they say, like, when they put it in, like, hey, this is something temporary, and once we have the time to devote to it, we'll, you know, fix it. And they apparently don't think any of those are huge priorities, because they had to put... I really think that Storm Legion might be behind schedule or something, and that's why they still haven't even released release date. And maybe they're just trying to, you know, get us, you know, as much time up until, I don't know, maybe, like, September-ish, and then, like, they can give us a release date and all more info along with that.
Well, you know, I didn't put this in the notes, but somebody did ask about dimensions in the AMA, so it's interesting that you actually just brought this up and thought maybe Storm Legion is running behind schedule, because I did mention it, but I kind of have the same feeling, and I just immediately dismissed it, because we really don't know anything about Storm Legion at this point, so it's hard to really tell, you know, like, how close they are to release on this. But somebody had asked about the dimensions, which is supposed to be the player housing coming in Storm Legion, and the response that they got, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, was that Dimensions was essentially still just drying on the whiteboard, was like the term that they used. So it sounds like they haven't even started on Dimensions yet. This is still just an idea that's on the whiteboard in the office that they haven't done anything with yet. But I mean, they're closing in, right? Because we're in August. It's August 1st now, so they've got 3 to 4 months to get Storm Legion out. You think that they could design something like Dimensions in 3 months? It does kind of sound like they're behind schedule a bit.
I had the exact same thought. Makes me wonder, like, how fast they're actually creating these things, unless they're doing it at light speed in some way we don't know.
It also kind of has to, it worries me a little bit, because obviously they're going to have to do some kind of beta for Storm Legion. How long is the beta really going to be? I mean, it's always been a prime topic of discussion, is how much testing goes into a lot of the content that we see in Rift. Because we get a ton of great content, but it always, at least very recently, comes out and feels like it really should have seen more testing. And I'm afraid the Storm Legion might run into the same problem, where they didn't have enough testing time on it because they were too busy, you know, trying to rush it out. They were too far behind schedule.
I think a lot of things that have come out recently, you know, are a factor of devoting so many resources to Storm Legion. We talked about that to an extent. Conquest is obviously a huge example. I think there's a multitude of things that result in I don't think they're half ideas. I think they're just poorly executed because they just don't have a big enough team to sustain so much content.
So we haven't gotten a date yet. We haven't seen anything. I haven't seen Tryon post anything about this yet. But the last time that they did a live stream show, they did mention that they were going to be showcasing the Mage. And they said in the next couple of weeks. So going by that, it should be sometime this week that we see the new Mage Soul. And that brings us to our next AMA highlight, which is the existing souls in Storm Legion. What is going to happen to the existing souls in Storm Legion? And see, who is this that I didn't put down who responded. I think this was Hartsman that said this. Specifically, Bard has been one that I've been playtesting a lot myself on our internal servers. We too would also very much like Bard to be one of the fun/effective choices, as opposed to its wide perception of, hey, you get to be the bard. Aw, man. Which, if you play a rogue, I think just about every rogue has been in that position. But so, we're definitely going to see some incoming bard love here, but the question kind of remains, are we going to see some sweeping changes, like some complete redesigns of the current souls, or are they just going to be minor enhancements and balancing tweaks?
Well, as far as bard is concerned, that's definitely the perception of most rogues. We've talked in previous episodes, I think it's pretty close. It doesn't need a huge overhaul to be effective, unless they, go along with previous things you said, and they made it a full healing soul. That'd be pretty awesome. And this was definitely Hartsman that said this, by the way. I really hope that they do pretty massive overhauls. I don't want to see minor tweaks, because again, that'd be one of those things I'd classify as like underwhelming. If they devote, so many things and half-ass so many things in order to sacrifice for Storm Legion, it better be pretty damn good.
So speaking of the souls, let's talk about the new souls coming in Storm Legion, because I've got a little bit of a concern about this. Because new souls, there is no rebalancing for them. They're brand new, right? They're going to be entirely new. And if they're just like phenomenal, if they're just awesome, they're powerful, or they're competitive and they're interesting, they're going to be like instant flavor of the month. You know what I mean? And that's the question, kind of, is like, are they going to be up to par with the old souls in their new form? If so, who's going to want to play the old souls? Why play the old souls when you just play the new one? Everybody's going to be playing the new soul.
That's why they have to do pretty extensive reworks, unless, so they feel fresh and new, or else it's going to be, like a moot point. People are just going to be like, what are you doing today? And we're all one roll. That'd be terrible. That'd be such a bad result for them if that indeed happened.
See, that's why I think that we are going to see some serious redesigns of the current souls, especially souls like Druid and Elementalist and Bard and a lot of the lesser desired, souls, the ones that people don't really enjoy as much right now or just can't be competitive. Like, nobody is going to be competitive with a 51-point Elementalist right now. It's fun, and sometimes you can get some interesting kills in PvP with it, and it might have its niche in, a few of the more survival-heavy fights because you have a really good tank pet, I think it's Zamira. I forget the name of the boss off the top of my head, but she's the pregnant ghost in Harmonel, and somebody has to go to the top and click each of the different tombs, and they have to be able to deal with an elite ad all on their own. A lot of mages used Elementalist, 51-point Elementalist, to deal with that. But outside of that, there's not really a point, to Elementalist right now. So I think we're going to have to see those reworks, because without them, the new souls are just going to completely take over everything.
Like I said before, I completely agree. And, we've talked to FAIR. I really expect some major, or I hope I should say, some major reworks to the Warrior and all the tank classes. So I'm more intrigued to play those, because I'm dying to play a tank, obviously.
Flip that perception real quick, too. What happens if the new souls come out and they're not up to par with the old souls? What if the reworks for the old souls are just so much better that you're like, wow, I thought I loved Champion before the expansion. Now it's just insane. Then who the hell is going to play the new souls? And if nobody's interested in the new souls, that's kind of like half the excitement of the expansion that's just snuffed out.
That'd be hard to accomplish. I almost feel like, well, I guess it's the same thing as when, in terms of the balancing, I could see a new soul being overpowered and underpowered. So I guess that could also apply to its just straight up enjoyability. People could be completely underwhelmed by it. But if that actually happened, that'd be like pretty terrible. I really hope that they do a lot more internal testing than they've done with the raids recently, because, we've seen the results of that. Obviously, the tremendous amount of bugs and just lack of good results. So I hope that there's so much testing that we never have to, discuss either one of these scenarios.
Kel brings up a point in chat. Says, I doubt they could pull that off. Everyone would want to play the new souls, probably even if they are bad. What if they are bad and everybody does want to play the new Souls? Can you imagine how insanely difficult some of these new five-man dungeons are going to be when everybody's, like, trying to play these new Souls? And, you know, you might be the one person that's like, yeah, I'm playing Justicar because Justicar is still better than the new tank Soul the Cleric gets, or whatever. And you're telling the people in, you know, in your raid that are doing, like, 500 DPS, they're like, dude, I could do three times that in Classic. You can't use the new Soul. They're garbage right now. But they're going to want to use them, and you're going to be stuck in bad groups. Like, this could go, like, either way to, like, either extreme, you know? And it's really got me concerned recently the more I've thought about it.
Sure hope that if anything in that event, they're prepared for the fallout, and they know exactly, you know, what route to go, how to fix it, and they do it extremely fast, because that would just be absolutely terrible if either one of those scenarios happened.
Well, we mentioned in a previous episode that it could be a good thing for Rift because we all enjoy being able to hybrid the souls and toy with the souls and interchange everything. But it could be a really good thing for Rift to just focus on a 51-point build, like the really, really deep build. So, like, if you want to play a Pyromancer, then you're going to play a 51-point Pyromancer, and the expansion might be have to be a 61-point Pyromancer, you know? And then same thing for, like, Druid or whatever. Where it's just like that for everybody, where you have to go 51-plus points deep into a soul for that soul to work, and then you get, you know, 15 to 20 points that you can kind of toss around a little bit between the other souls. I think we're going to have to go that way, especially once you add in the new soul, because if you don't, then you're not just balancing that one new soul, you're also balancing any new passives or any new procs or other abilities that might be able to be easily reached by a hybrid spec.
Yeah, I expect them to do some insanely, you know, extensive, not just, you know, reworking them, but fleshing them out so you don't have any of these types of scenarios. Not necessarily them being underwhelming, but just so you don't have any, you know, specs that are just overpowered because you go too far into a tree and whatnot. And we've talked off air. We expect them to go more shit up, like 44 and 51 point specs. Like, I think hybriding is going to slowly get, you know, obsoleted simply because it'll be easier to balance that way. And more souls will be, you know, competitive if they do that, rather than now where, like, two or three souls at most are competitive and that's it.
I really hope that they're really considering, it's almost like, I guess homogenization isn't really the right word for it, but just more focus, you know, on the individual souls. I think I want to see them do that. I think 20 points is going to be enough to make me feel unique. And I mean, let's face it, you know what I mean? When you're playing your classes right now, you're playing form specs anyways. It's not like you're playing super unique specs as it is. Not really going to be missing out on a whole lot, but you are going to gain more choices on which soul you want to play as your main soul, you know?
Man, it's definitely true. No one's sitting there, like, you know, min-maxing with a spec anymore. That probably happened at launch, but no longer. The first thing you do now is Google, like, the patch, like 1.8, 1.9, and a role name, or a soul name, rather, like Saboteur, Ranger, etc. And that's where, you know, your launching off point is, and you spec from there. You know, you pretty much read a form, like you said. So I don't think anyone's going to miss that. And like I said, if it comes out to where most specs are 44, whatever, 51, whatever, but in the end, almost all the souls are viable, as opposed to now where there's more hybriding, but less souls are viable, I don't think anyone can argue with that.
So let's talk about Bravain and Duskan. These are the two new continents coming with Storm Legion. We don't know much about them, but we do know that they're supposed to be tripling the size of Talara overall, and each zone is supposed to be something like 3 to 4 times the size of Ember Isle. Each zone is going to have, or each continent, rather, is going to have 6 new zones, I think? Or is it 6 new zones total between the two?
I thought it was 6 per.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was 6 per.
Okay, so if it's 6 new zones per continent, right, they're going to have to create new environments for all of them. And there goes Joe again. I hope he didn't knock his computer off his desk.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you missed it, Juno, but we started the episode earlier, and Joe got a phone call or something, and he rushed to try to hang up the phone real quick or stop it from ringing, and in the process ended up knocking his tower off his desk and then disconnected. So,
oh, no. Oh, my God. That's my nightmare.
So, basically what I'm getting at is, you know, you look at, like, Shimmer Sand, which is all is just a giant desert, and then, you know, there's the White Sands area, but it's not really all that different, you know, and then Stillmore is all pretty much the same, and Iron Pine is, there's not a lot of diversity for Iron Pine, really. So, you know, how much diversity is enough? Because Ember Isle is, they often use Ember Isle when referring to the diversity of environments in a zone. And if you look at all the different environments and types of terrains and stuff in Ember Isle, if you really want to stretch it, you could say Dormant Core is one, which is kind of like a trench and canyon area. Mount Carcera, obviously, is all volcanic rock and molten lava and everything. The majority of Ember Isle is all, like, tropical rainforest, and then there's the Temple of Maracus and the different temples, ruins and stuff that are scattered around the area. But of those ones mentioned, the only two that I think are really truly like qualify as environments are the, you know, the volcanic area and the tropical forest, and that's it.
Right. Yeah, I can see that reasoning. But if you, I mean, if you look at the rest of the of Talara, it probably is the most diverse, right, area out of
everything. Oh, definitely. Like, comparatively, yeah, it is. So I thought about this for a second. I was like, okay, well, if one zone in Storm Legion is four times the size of Ember Isle, then shouldn't it have four times as much diversity in environments as well?
Well, you would hope so. I would hope so. I think it's kind of like if you look at real-world environments, right, there aren't that many that are hugely diverse. So when I look at Talara's landscape, it seems kind of real world to me. You know, they make huge areas that are the same, and then you'll have a little bit of diversity here and there. So I don't know. I can't really see them putting a ton of diversity in the environment. I hope they do.
Well, if they actually, if they went with this, right, if it did have four times as much diversity and four times as much size, that's actually eight environmental styles per zone times six zones. You're talking about like 48 different landscapes. That all of a sudden sounds like a lot.
Yeah, can you even imagine it? I mean, really? I don't know what they would put in there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got forests, and you've got deserts, and you've got snow, and then I guess you've got, like, water and right, maybe a mountainous area. But I mean, I can think of, I could probably list maybe seven or eight off the top of my head, but that's really, yeah, about it.
Yeah, me too. I can't imagine it. So I'm just like, nah, I'm not.
Well, obviously, they're probably not going to have four times as much diversity. So I don't know. They want these zones to be so much bigger because I think they want to give Rift more of like a huge world, just kind of open, kind of sandbox feel where exploration feels a little bit more rewarding. And it's a little bit more fun to, you know, a quest never takes you to, say, you know, to one specific end of like Duskin. And you decide just randomly to go over there and see what's over there and you find some really cool stuff. That could be awesome, but what are they going to do? I'm going to get bored if I'm leveling in the zones and I'm looking at the same plains or the same desert for, you know, four or five levels.
I do already. I mean, you know, some, it's beautiful, but they already feel kind of big, you know, and if you're going along and you're in there for a long time doing all the quests and everything, after a while, you're like, okay, you know, I'm ready for something else. I'm ready for, let's go to a different zone, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're doing the same kinds of quests, kill X this, collect X that or whatever, but it's really nice during the leveling process. It's you need something fresh to look at, you know, like going from like Silverwood to Gloamwood is very obvious. You know, you mm-hmm. go from this really bright fairy forest to this really dark and gloomy spiders and spider webs and werewolves and all this kind of like a horror thing. And it's really refreshing, even though you're doing the same kinds of quests. It's still really refreshing, and you really need that.
Yeah, I love it. I love that. That's the only thing I'm thinking is maybe they have this huge environment, you know, these zones, but they roll together. You know what I mean? They have distinctive different little styles, kind of like that, where they just kind of turn a corner and you're like, oh, look at, there comes a forest. And then you get through the forest and, oh, there's a river. And on the other side of the river, there's a rainforest. Oh, wow. You know, and
what's your favorite zone? I'm curious. What's your favorite zone so far as just like appearance?
I like Mushi in Highlands.
Is it the rain?
Yeah, okay. I like the environment. I like the green. I live in the desert, so it's the opposite of where I live. So I love that kind of thing. I can't stand to be in the deserty areas. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, I don't like that. Although Shimmer Sand as a desert wasn't actually too bad because there were a lot of kind of like tunnelways and caverns and stuff like that and little pockets in the mountainside and stuff that you could go into, and there might be a quest hub in there and stuff, so it kind of broke that up a little bit, whereas a lot of deserts in MMOs are just wide open sand and just endless sand everywhere you look.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about. I hope that they have some things like that to, like, break it up, you know, they have some, like you said, caves, and they have some different, just, I don't know, there's so, if you look at the world in general, there are so many different things that hopefully they can just squeeze in there. They have plenty of room, right? So
I think my favorite so far is probably Iron Pine Peak. I really do. Yeah. I like the lighting in Moonshade Highlands a lot, and whenever it rains, it looks really nice. I don't know. It gives a really nice feeling to that zone, so I like that zone a lot. But I love the snowy zones. I've always loved the snowy zones. I like the especially when they do like the snowstorm effect really good, which I think Iron Pine looks really good with that. It would be kind of nice though if they had an area like that in the expansion that maybe like there would be different parts of the day or times in the day where the snow picked up and was like so thick that it was like Realm of the Fae where you just couldn't see past, you know, more than like 5 feet in front of you.
Yes, I see. I love things like that, but how many players would throw a fit?
Well, yeah, it's funny because that's actually one of the reasons why Joe hates Realm of the Fae, because he hates that area when you get up to the winter area, the winter season, and you can't see in front of you worth shit really, because right. There's so much snow. I loved it. When I first saw that, I thought that was awesome because I mean, think about PvE, right? What's PvE? It stands for player versus environment. It's awesome when the environment actually comes into play.
That's right, exactly. I love it when they put those things in, and every time they do, and I'm like, oh, look at this awesome rainstorm, and you can hardly see, or the mist when they have the fog rolling in. I think that's awesome, but there'll be like a ton of forum posts. People are like, oh, this is crap. I just want to get to my thing and do my thing, and I'm like, oh, come on. It's so pretty.
So I don't know what happened to Joe, but you're gonna have to rescue me from Joe's fail tonight.
Uh-oh. I'm not nearly as elite as you guys, so as long as you know that, I'm okay.
We just spend way too much time reading. We're nowhere near as elite as we might sound. But there are probably actual elite players in chat right now listening, and they're like, they're not elite. What's he talking about? With how big these zones are, right, I also got to thinking about the kind of the algorithm that they use to determine when a zone event is going to happen. Because currently, the way the system is designed is that it takes the cumulative population, the total population, of all of the 50 zones, being Stillmore, I forget if it counts Ember Isle or not, but it takes Stillmore, Shimmersand, and Iron Pine Peak in, and it totals up the total number of players and decides if there's enough players to spawn a major zone event. And it's working out fairly well for the game right now, but once the expansion hits, I'm thinking they're going to have to change the way it decides when a zone event happens, because you can't add the population of, you know, the entirety of like you know, Brevane and Duskin together. How are you going to determine when these major zone events happen?
Yeah, I'm actually worried about that too. I hope they have a lot of portals in there or something.
Yeah, which is the other thing that we wanted to talk about too, is when a zone event does happen, these are going to be such massive, you know, zones by comparison. I mean, we're talking about 2, 3, or 4 times something right around there, the size of Ember Isle. It's difficult enough as it is. Thank God for all the porticulums on the Ember Isle. It's difficult enough as it is to get from objective to objective during a zone event on the Isle right now. Could you imagine trying to get from, like, if you're all the way at the bottom of Duskin, then you have to get all the way to the top for an objective?
No, I really hope that they add in a lot more of those, because exactly like you said, you have these 6 massive zones on one and 6 on another one. Plus the old ones, if you wanted to do, you know, any of the leveling down or anything like that, how are you going to, I really hope they add in a lot of those so that you could just head over there really easy and make it fast, or maybe come up with a little bit of a different take on a different idea of how to get there. I don't know. Something. Please.
Well, the argument for a lot of players is that the more porticulums you add, the less dangerous the zones become, because you don't have to travel past invasions and you don't have to travel past rifts and through nodes that or quest hubs that might have been taken over by invasions. You don't have to deal with any of that because you can simply teleport to the next objective and it's no problem. You can bypass all the danger completely. I'm kind of somewhere in between, because I really miss that danger. When the game first came out, I remember what it looked like when you would open your map in Free March and your map was completely covered by death rifts. Like, you couldn't see the map. You couldn't even see, like, player dots. There were so many rifts. It was, yes, I'm going to say it, it was total overcast.
It was, though. I miss that, too. I want more of that. I really wish they would do more of that, for sure. And I can see the complaint about the particulums in the world that we have right now, the way that it is right now. But with it being this much larger, you know, it doesn't make any sense. How are you going to get there to help anybody if you have to, you know, run all the way?
I think a lot of the concern for Trion's end was the population and the participation. And that's why they kind of forsake the concept of having that much there to have to defend against. But I mean, Storm Legion, I don't know. I think Storm Legion is going to really spike up the subscription numbers, and we're going to be able to see this again. But then, like I said, with the size of the zones, it's going to be difficult to travel between them. So what do you think, Juno? Would you rather there be more porticulums and less danger, or more danger and less porticulums?
I mean, I can't have my cake and eat it too. I want both.
No, you can't.
I want more. I want them. Maybe they could take the porticulums and put them in an area where that's dangerous to get to, or the rifts are spawning right there, something so that you still have to fight to get to it. But then once you get to it, you can just zip on over to the other area that's also engulfed in monsters. I don't know. I want it all.
What if the invasions could destroy particulums?
Yeah. Or they take, I wonder, yeah, exactly. They go in there and they just take them over, and you have to, that'd be a pain.
I wonder if Trion's thought of that, because that would actually be really interesting if you had, like, you know, 6 or 7 or hell, 10 different Porticulums. So if there isn't a zone event going on, it's really easy to get around these massive zones. But then when a zone event is going on, if you want to keep that mobility, you're going to have to seriously set up, you know, camp and defend key Porticulums. Otherwise, right, you won't be able to get around, and then it becomes the player's fault.
Right, yeah, that would be...
I would love that. That's kind mm-hmm. of something that I think that a lot of the zone events have been lacking is objectives. Kind of like a kind of like Conquest, lacking objectives.
Yes. Poor Conquest.
Yeah, we've talked about Conquest way too much, so I just kind of dropped that. That was like a total troll. I'll stop trolling now. But I want more objectives for the zone events, and that would be a really nice addition to them, is having to defend key points such as, you know, quest hubs and Porticulums and stuff, so that you can maintain your mobility around the map.
I would love that, totally. But
let's get to what we brought you on the show for. This is the fun part, is the lore. And we know that you do Rift Shinies, right? You maybe want to tell them a little bit about Rift Shinies before we continue?
Well, Rift Shinies is a little podcast that I have. We does some of the news, whatever the recent news is that's going on during the last week. And it's not all from Trion. I pull it from Rift Junkies or the forums and things like that, just see what people are talking about. I try to do something a little bit different because you guys already cover everything, Leap. You know, you have a couple other podcasts that cover the major things too. So I try to do something a little bit more different, you know. And it seems like the thing that people have kind of latched on to with it is the little lore segment that I do, where I basically read a story about one of the characters that's in the game, and I try to make it fun. And people really love that. So I was a little bit surprised actually by that, but it's a lot of fun to explore. That's the thing about Rift, the storyline. There's so many different amazing characters in the game, you know. And when you're in the game and you're playing, you don't get all of the nuggets at once, right? You find a little piece here, a little piece there, a little piece over there, and you're running through and you're trying to put things together, or you're not. You're just all Leap like Joe, and you don't care, and you just want to, you know, be awesome. That's totally cool. Well, I miss that, like, finding out, what is the story? What's underneath there? What is all of this stuff really about? And who is this character? Who's Asha Katari? Where did she come from? And why is she awesome and have that crazy tattoo? And or who is Krusha? And you know, Regulus, who are they really? So I like to take that and, like, read a little story, and you get to learn a little bit more about the world that you're in. And I find it more immersive that way, personally, because then when you're in there and you see these things, you understand and realize what kind of a little bit more of what's going on. So I really like the lore in Rift. It's just really awesome.
I've never been a huge lore buff. Like, you know, I played World of Warcraft, like a lot of players that play Rift, for a long time. And I always liked when friends told me a little bit about, you know, the lore, like when a new boss comes out and they tell me who it is and stuff. But I never spent time, like, reading the Warcraft books or anything like that. And I think Trion's done a pretty good job where you get kind of a little taste of the lore in the game. And I think a lot of players probably don't realize this, but a lot of the main characters, you can actually walk up to them and there's a little dialogue thing. You can click on it and you can, like, ask them something, like, you know, like, I don't know if this works for Asha Katari, but for example, it might be like, you know, Asha, where did you get your scars? Or tell me about your time with Regulus or something. And you can read a little bit about it.
Yeah, she actually will tell you a little bit about that.
And it's really cool. Like, they've built a really big story around Rift and around Talar and all the different characters. And it gives a lot more meaning when you go up against, like, Atrophinius, and you know actually, like who he is, and like why he is the way he is. And he's just kind of like this fairy slave, but he doesn't care because he gets meat.
Right, exactly. It's fast. You know what I really like about it for a young game, right? World of Warcraft, for example, like you said, they have a huge amount of lore. They have a ton of books and just this amazing amassed history. And I'm the same way. I played World of Warcraft for about 5 years, and the lore never particularly grabbed me there for some reason. But in Rift, the characters are so flawed. I don't think there's a single character that I've run across anyway, and I could be wrong. I'm not an expert. I'm an enthusiast, actually. But I haven't run across a single character in Rift that isn't flawed in some sometimes terrible way, actually. Some part of their past that was just awful, or something is there, you know what I mean? And I love that they all have a little bit of dark side. They have a little bit of a light side. There's stuff there to explore. It makes them really fascinating characters to look at. And I think that's what it is that's most interesting, is diversity and the darkness there.
You know, there are actually times where I wish I wasn't a guardian because I don't like what's his name? Who's the head Mythosian there, the head of the guardian?
Cyril.
Cyril, yeah.
Cyril, yeah.
I don't like Cyril. I hate that guy.
I don't like him either.
I hate that guy. But I love being a dwarf though.
Yeah. No, I don't like him either.
So let's talk about the Infinity Gate and the Brevanians, because there was a bunch of new lore that they just put out, and it has to do with Crucia and Regulus, the Infinity Gate, and what that is and how that works and everything. But from what I gathered from the lore, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, because this is fairly fresh in my mind, but I don't have all of it right in front of me. The Brevanians were the ones who originally invented the Infinity Gate, and they did so that they would be able to travel to the planes. And when they first opened it up, that's apparently how the Bloodstorm got to Talara. Is that right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah, they actually invented a lot of different things, and this was their biggest, most expensive invention. And their plan was to go to the other elements, or the other planes, and basically, it's just like Christopher Columbus going out and exploring, right? And you land somewhere and you're like, okay, this is nice. It's ours now. We're taking it. And exploring those places and seeing what they can use for themselves. But they didn't know about the Bloodstorm, right? They had no idea. They didn't know what was out there. It's like us exploring outer space. You never know if you're waking some sleeping dragon, right? You have no idea. So they set this thing up and they've got it all ready to go. It's got a ton of source stone, but it's a lot of energy basically in this thing. It's a very, very powerful giant machine, and thousands of people come down to watch it be turned on basically. And when they turn it on, basically it's like this huge beam of energy just shoots up and hits the sky, breaks through, and they basically made like a shortcut for the Bloodstorm to come down, because they could sense the energy and the power, and they just came straight here and they bombarded right through the sky. Could you imagine how insane that would be? They bombard in, they destroy the Infinity Gate, they kill thousands of people, and then they rampage across the land and destroy things. Crucia was the only one who stopped for a second and turned around and looked and was like, you know what? I could probably use that later, you know?
Yeah, she saw the potential for the Infinity Gate to actually become her way to conquer the other planes as well as Talara.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's kind of where she started working on this massively devious plan. You know, there is one thing about this new lore, which as cool as it is, and as awesome as the Infinity Gate sounds, as kind of being like the heart of everything that's been happening in Talara, I could have sworn that it was Orfeel and his inventing of the machines with the King of Mythosia that originally opened the rifts.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a time divergence there, because it was about 1,500 years ago, I think, initially, and it was supposed to, when the Bloodstorm was supposed to invade. And I'm a little confused on this one too, to tell you the truth.
So you think like this is like the Infinity Gate and the Brevanians is kind of like a much more ancient story? Like this has happened, like everything we knew about Orfeel and the machines bringing the rifts through and the Bloodstorm coming through was kind of, it wasn't their first time on Talara. This was kind of like their return after being banished once before already.
Well, I think what happened was it was about 1,500 years ago when the Bloodstorm invaded initially. So that's when this happened. And then I think it was only about 20 years ago when Adrexus had Orfeel help him build reconstruct the ancient Eth machines, and then they broke the ward. Because that's right, what happened was this happened with the Infinity Gate. Then when we were able to beat them back, basically we beat the Bloodstorm back, destroyed Regulus's body, sent his soul off, imprisoned the other dragons and everything like that, they were able to erect the ward, I believe, which was like a protection thing. And
then
Adrexus is the one who broke the ward, enabling Regulus to come back and the rifts to come back.
Okay, so this was yeah. Right. Well, that makes sense. That makes me feel a lot better, because I was like, this is such an awesome story. It's like, but wait a minute.
No,
how does that work? It kind of sounded like we were getting two origins.
Right, no, it's this was just a much older, this happened much longer ago.
So Storm Legion is going to be all about the Infinity Gate and Crucia and Regulus. And apparently, you know, Crucia, obviously, she set her plan to take the Infinity Gate for herself. She said she set this plan in motion a long time ago. Regulus is apparently just now realizing the potential of it. And from what we got in the lore, Regulus knows where the key is. But Crucia has control over the gate itself. So they're kind of going head to head right now. And from what everything we know, these are not only the only two dragon aspects left alive, but they're also, assumingly, the two most powerful ones.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, they're absolutely the two most powerful ones. And Regulus, you know, he's actually a little bit afraid of her. She's been out there, right, for the last 20 years. I think she has half of that continent. The Storm Legion has half of that continent. And they've been rebuilding things. That's where Volan comes from, right? Because she can talk to people with her mind, so through the little cracks or whatever in her prison, wherever she's at. And so she sends out these messages, and that's how she's controlling her minions, if you will. So they've been working on reconstructing this ancient Bravanian technology, getting the Infinity up and running again, because it was completely busted when they came through. They destroyed it. So the Storm Legion's been rebuilding that. They've been amassing her army bigger and bigger and bigger out there. So Regulus hasn't been able to do a lot. His body was completely destroyed. His soul was sent off. So she's got a head start on him, and she's incredibly smart. So yeah, he's not very happy about about all this stuff, because
yeah, it actually did say, like, in the lore that Regulus is actually terrified of Crucia.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of makes me wonder, you think we got it wrong? What if we got it wrong? What if in Storm Legion, when the raids come out and we get to kill these dragons, what if we kill Regulus first? What if Crucia takes over? Maybe she's the real big bad guy.
Right. I mean, there's not a lot of telling at this point, seriously, because honestly, out of the Bloodstorm, she's the most hated. Like, Laethys hated her, Regulus hates her, and she seems to be the smartest also. He's the most powerful, though. And he controls the souls, right? So who's to say that he's not going to yank Melforge and Greenscale out of the soul stream? And if he had them to back him up, then maybe they could overtake her. I don't know. They could go anywhere with it. That's the exciting thing about it.
That's the other thing that I can't help but think is, you know, originally when they start talking about how big and bad Regulus is, he's the dragon of death. You know, mm-hmm. And there are several characters, like the one that you kill in the the solo instance, right? The planar attunement, where you get tuned for the planar attunement.
Oh, right.
And you kill that guy, and I forget his name off the top of my head, but he says, "You killed me, you only brought me closer to my master, who is Regulus, because Regulus is the dragon of death." So
right.
how do you defeat something that, you know, controls the River of Souls, essentially, who has full control over the death? I mean,
right.
If you kill Regulus, he's just going to come back. Like, he's basically eternal, because he's just going to keep resurrecting himself because he is death.
That's just it. And everybody, you know, I've heard a lot of people talking about, well, you know, we've already killed this dragon, we killed that. Well, you know, what are we going to do when we've killed all the dragons? Well, they're not necessarily dead, besides the fact that they're not really dragons. That's just their aspect on Talara. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, that's absolutely true. I think that's something that a lot of people overlook. And I actually had commented on another site of people who, somebody who obviously hadn't really played the game a whole lot, but they were saying, like, oh, Rift's story is just, you know, somebody was talking about the lore in Rift and how much they loved it. And they're like, Rift's story is just more the typical dragon stuff. But they're not. They aren't. They're not actually dragons. That's just their method for existing on Talara right now due to the ward. If the ward ever goes down,
right,
they're not actually dead.
We don't even know what they actually are. We don't know what they look like. We don't know where they come from. We don't know a lot. There's a lot that we don't know. So,
which actually brings me to our next little topic that I wanted to bring up too, is what is this undying attraction that we have to go to the elemental planes? Because I think that, you know, the Infinity Gate and having the ability to use this tool to travel to the other planes is going to be really good for the players, because us as players, ever since Rift first came out, the first thing that went through everybody's mind was these giant rifts open the sky, that's amazing. And then the second thing was, I want to go into that rift and come out on the other side and see what the Plane of Death looks like and see what the Plane of Fire looks like. We've been wanting this for a long time, and it seems like it's realistic now. It's a possibility. We're going to eventually get to go to the elemental planes. But like, what is this undying attraction? I think that could be part of it, is getting to see what the aspects actually look like when they're not in dragon form.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I mean, it's still the exploration thing, right? And the unknown. And we know what Talara looks like. There's only so much that they can do really with the environment. It's the planes. We don't know. We're just no idea what they look. I think there are on a Talarapedia, I think there is some concept art there the different planes. If I remember correctly, it's been a while since I looked at it, but I remember looking at it. It was just like, wow, they're like an alien planet.
Maybe we'll finally get our flying mounts when we eventually go to the plane of air, because otherwise, how are you going to get around the plane of air?
Right.
The whole thing is going to be in the sky. Totally. But you know, this is actually kind of a bad thing for the story too, don't you think? Right. Being able to travel to the planes, I mean, from what we've just learned recently, the opening of the Infinity Gate was what allowed the Bloodstorm to invade in the first place. So aren't we making the same mistake twice?
Possible. That's what I love about Rift's story. Anything is possible.
It is true. I mean, they've done such an awesome job with writing this to kind of, that's the key to lore, to writing a good story, I think, is you want the player to become interested and start asking all these questions and thinking about the possibilities of where the story could go and where your player can go and what's going to happen to the main characters.
You can completely fall down the rabbit hole because it could go anywhere. As a matter of fact, we don't necessarily know that there are only 6 planes out there. It's not a fact. That's just the ones that they have discovered. And I remember reading that somewhere and going, oh, which means that we could get into one of these planes and then discover that there are more planes. This is just, Talara's the nexus in between these planes, right? That's what makes it kind of so amazing and special. That's why the dragons really want it. It has an amazing amount of power because of its physical location. So who's to say that if you go to the death plane, maybe somewhere in the death plane you find another dimension, you find another door to another dimension, a completely different thing. Who knows? It could go on anywhere. It's nuts.
There could be another nexus. What if there's more than one nexus out there?
Right?
Wouldn't that be crazy? We're like 3 expansions ahead of Trion right now with us.
We are. That's the nice thing about it is whenever you hear people saying that, oh, well, you know, they're going to run out of this. No, they're not. They have set it up in such a beautiful way. They could expand this out for the next 50 years. Not that that'll happen, but they could. They have left themselves such a nice wide open door. It's beautiful.
And, you know, the creative minds at Trion have done such an awesome job, not just in my opinion with the story, but something else that I've always loved too. And you can tell us what you think about this, maybe even who your favorite dragon is so far. But their interpretation of these different dragons is awesome. You know,
yes.
I mean, like when they first showed us Greenscale, when the game first came out, he did not look like a normal dragon. He was kind of fat. He was kind of chunky. You know what I mean? But he had a very unique look to him, and it wasn't what, you know, anybody was really expecting. It wasn't like a World of Warcraft dragon or anything like that, or a dragon from any of the books you might read. And then like Lathys, who's comprised entirely of gold. Who would have thought of that? She's the dragon
amazing.
Of Earth. I would have expected rock or something like that, but or grass or something. I don't know, something else that felt more earthy. But she's gold. You know, it was much her image was a lot more lore driven. And then Achilleos, who I think he's my personal favorite, because I think this might sound funny. Don't get the wrong impression of me. I'm not psychotic, but he's so psychotic. I love him.
I do too. He's completely mad. I love it. I do too.
But he's so intelligent. Like when I read the story for Achilleos crawling up the side of like I pictured him. I don't remember if the lore actually said that he did this exactly, but I picture this giant squid dragon thing crawling up the side of this giant, like, super tall brick tower and peering in through a little inlet, through a little, like, cut-open window, and watching the scholar reading over his shoulder. And then when he's done, a tentacle comes in, just grabs him, and he's just chomped.
Yep, that's it. No, he's brilliant. I think he was mad before he had all of the knowledge in the universe, right? I think he was already a little bit crazy, but he's especially crazy now. And that's just so much fun. What a fun character is that?
It is. And who would have expected the Dragon of Water to not really even be a dragon? He's a lot more of a squid.
No, they don't have, I don't think they have a single that I've seen anyway. I don't think they have a single dragon, you know?
I think Maleforge is the only one. Maleforge is pretty, he's kind of
devilish.
He's
the closest.
But he is definitely the closest one. And Crucia, when you look at Crucia's dragon form, my God.
I know, right? Serpent-like and extra wing-looking things, and I love their imagination.
They really like took the. I love that they form all these characters so much around the lore, and not about like what you expect, you know, from a dragon like Crucia. A lot of her lore, and feel free to improve on this with me. But her lore, a lot of it surrounds her interest in the Bravanians and their technology, and so she became very interested in advancing their technology and Then she appears, you know, we see the image of her for the first time now at Storm Legion's release, and she appears like she's a machine. She's got these wings that don't look like they should work for flight, but they do, and she's got glass blades hanging off of them, and she's got all kinds of mechanical armor and stuff surrounding her, and she just looks amazing.
That's right. Yeah, that's her thing, because I really do think out of all of them, she's probably the smartest one. She's the only one that goes, you know, I could take over all this stuff and improve upon it. I could take over this, not only this whole place, but I could take over my brothers and sisters realm. I could rule everything. She's like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to take it all over. And she's all about that, all about the machinery and the, oh, it's just, you've seen Valan, you know what I mean? Like, that's her doing. They're the ones that did that. The Bravanians didn't do that. They didn't make that. So it's just, it's fantastic. It's amazing.
I like Kel's comment in chat. He wants to know, what's the deal with her super hot human form? Is it because of her need to control and dominate people? I don't know. Do they even choose their avatars like that?
I don't know. I think if any of them could, it would be her.
I think she's the only one to ever actually take a human form too.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen any of the other ones in a human form.
So this is just, I don't know. This is just,
and that could be
what
an
she
image.
Chooses to look like, I guess.
Yeah, that could be an image that she projects into the minds of those that she does, that she controls and dominates. Exactly. That could be it. It doesn't say.
Oh, that's good.
I haven't seen anything where it specifies, but she does that. So why wouldn't she also give them a visage?
That's really good, because we know that she does have these kind of like this almost psychic power about her, where she can get into the minds of important people. And you know, that I love that. That gets me so excited to think that, like, just not that I would want her to completely dominate my mind, but I mean, if that's what I saw when she did, I guess that wouldn't be too bad.
Right. No, that's her thing. She's the mind control one. That's what she does. She basically goes in and she can rework your mind. She kind of wipes it clean, and you're just her, you know, her little thrall. You have to do what she says. I don't think she can completely mind control somebody, but seriously, if she put that image in your head, you'd be like, yeah, whatever you want, man.
You know, maybe she's not going to kill Regulus, right? She's more devious than that. We're thinking really linear, like who's going to kill who? Who's going to win? Is it going to be Crucia or is it going to be Regulus? But with how she thinks and how devious she is and this mental powers, could you imagine if she gained the powers of Regulus and she controlled death by controlling Regulus mentally? That'd be amazing.
Right, and how much would she want that? You know, because even Laethys, one of the stories that I read, Crucia was totally like, you know, how can you carry all of this amazing power in this one little bitty thing? And Laethys is just like, yeah, I know you want that, you know? So maybe that's her thing, because she planned the whole thing. You know, it's really Crucia that kind of caused the Bloodstorm's downfall in the first place.
Yeah, because she wanted to kill all of her brethren.
She planted the idea in Malforge's mind, told Malforge, oh, look at, you know, Regulus is going to destroy everything that you want. If you don't do what he says, he's going to destroy it. And plus Malforge, you know, his thing was he wants to destroy you and then bring you back so he can destroy you again. He loves that, right? And he was pissed off at Regulus because Regulus wouldn't let him, won't let you do that. Regulus wants to destroy everything. He wants no life. He wants nothing at all. And so the rest of the dragons are kind of pissed off because they're greedy and they each want their own thing. Grusha is the one that whispered in Malforge's ear and set that whole thing up. And if it wasn't for that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So who's your favorite? Who's your favorite dragon so far?
I think it's actually, it was Malforge. I just love his rage, his anger. He's just, he's so easy to read. He's just, that's what he's about. He's just about the rage and the fight. You know what I mean? He's just the ultimate warrior. So much so that he's not even satisfied when he kills you. He wants to do it again and again. He just wants to keep killing you. And I don't know, part of that rage thing is really cool. But Crucia, with her deviousness, really fascinating character too. So, and then there's Regulus.
I never would have pegged that you would have picked Malforge.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I like Malforge because, you know, he's kind of like a typical dragon. He's very kind of devilish and everything. I do like the rage aspect about him, but he just, I don't know, he seems so simple. Like everything you said about like how easy he is to read, he seems so simple. He just seems so much like a typical dragon that I wouldn't have pegged it.
He is simple, but he's terrifying. If you read, I forget the ones, I read a story and it was about Malforge and you're basically inside his mind and it was just fast and it was just like, oh my gosh.
So what do you think about trial and releasing books? Do you think, because, you know, World of Warcraft has done that where they release some actual like full-on novels. What do you th you think that that would be worth it for Trion to do that?
God, I don't know why not. The only thing at this point I think that's holding them back is probably manpower, right? I mean, why not? Their story is huge. It's so just based on the characters that they list on the website, right?
Yep.
I could write a book about each and every one of those characters, because not only do they go into just in the little bit that they give you, not only do they go into basically a little bit of the mindset of that character, but they have a whole history mapped out. You know, they can tell you about their up, you know, their upbringing, and there's a ton of, you could write a gazillion books on it. Really,
yeah,
kids.
Absolutely. I mean, like, if you're talking about one of the dwarves, I forget the name, but it was said in chat, one of the key dwarf heroes on the Guardian side. He helps you out in the Hammernail Chronicle and stuff. I forget what his name is. I feel almost ashamed, like I should know his name, because I love the dwarf so much. But you could learn about him and what the dwarves were like, and kind of tell a story about the building of Hammernail,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah. And
there's
that's
a lot
the other
of
thing.
Untapped story potential.
What about the Brevanians, right? The ancient F. It's an entire universe they could populate, really. And that doesn't even count the dragons or the cults. You know, they could tell stories about the different leaders in the cults, and the things that they do are fascinating. And they have so much story. It's nuts.
You think they're ever going to revisit this concept that they had going on with time travel? Because that's how the Defiant are here, right? And
right.
This timeline is that they actually traveled back in time to this timeline, and the Guardians were resurrected in within yeah. this timeline. And that's how everybody kind of got here. You think that they're ever going to like touch on that again?
Oh, I'm sure they will, because they still have the technology. I mean, right now in the timeline that we're on right now, it's there. They're all coming back. I think it's 20 years in the future. That's the other thing that's really fascinating about it. Not only do you have the different planes of existence, but you have time travel. You know what I mean? So there's a gazillion things that they could do with that.
Yeah, there's a really nice blend between like sci-fi and fantasy when it comes to
mm-hmm.
Rift lore.
Oh yeah, it's very sci-fi.
I mean, we have
sci-fi.
A mind controlling mechanical dragon
yeah.
coming out.
Yeah, she's
how
awesome.
Is that not sci-fi?
Well, and plus the Orophil story, because you know he disappears at some point in the future. I think it's 13, 14 years or something like that. He just disappears completely. Nobody knows what happens to him. And I think the last thing that he was muttering, I remember correctly, was something about he was trying to perfect the resurrection system, and he said something about testing it on himself. So there's like a rumor that
yeah.
he tested it on himself, and that's why he's gone. But where did he go, and what is he doing there, and how is that going to affect us now? You know what I mean? There's so much.
Yeah, Orphiel is, he's an absolute genius from everything I know. He's
yeah.
essentially the smartest Talaran there is, period. There is nobody
right.
that comes anywhere close to his intellectual level. I wonder if he's going to come back. What if, you know, with how intelligent Crucia is, maybe Orphiel is going to come back, and that's how we'll actually defeat Crucia. Maybe
oh,
he's working
cool.
on something. He
yeah.
sees this whole plan, and he's working on his own plan. I don't know. Anything could happen, but
mm-hmm.
We got to wrap things up, Juno.
Okay. Thank you for having me on, really.
Yeah,
excited.
We'd
Thank
love
you.
To have you on again. We weren't quite as prepared tonight as I wish that we were, so my apologies for that. We had a few technical difficulties.
No, it was fabulous. Thank you.
But it's been great, and I love the Rift lore. If you haven't read the new Rift lore yet, head on over to riftgame.com, and there's all kinds of lore links over there. And also tune into riftshinies.podbean.com. You can hear Juno telling her lovely stories and her lovely voice, her lovely way, with all of those lovely little sound effects that you do in between scenes.
Thank you.
Rift Overcast is recorded live every Wednesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific, on our Twitch TV channel at twitch.tv/riftovercast. Recordings are aired every Friday each week. You can find episodes of Overcast on iTunes in the iTunes Store, via Stitcher Radio at stitcher.com, on YouTube at youtube.com/riftovercast, and on our website, riftovercast.blogspot.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/riftovercast and on Twitter at riftovercast for all the latest news and updates regarding the show. You can also contact us by email at riftovercast@gmail.com. We're always looking for new guests to come on the show and be a part of Community Boys, so if there's any area of Rift that you have extensive experience in or are especially passionate about, be sure to contact us with a little background about yourself and your desired topics. Overcast will also be doing a giveaway very shortly. I'm thinking we'll probably do a name that tune type deal, but we'll post the specifics in the next week or two on both Facebook and on Twitter. And as always, we want to hear your opinions on both the game and the show, so leave us a comment below via email or on any of the aforementioned social sites, and we will see you next week.